Catra Podcast Conversations for the Curious, Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome everyone to the deep dive. Today, we're taking on a big one, a really monumental, sometimes seen as intimidating, but genuinely brilliant work, Martin Heidegger's Being and Time. Now, I know what some of you might be thinking, Heidegger, isn't that incredibly dense, like philosophical bedrock? And yeah, it does have that reputation, but stick with us. We're here to sort of, we'll guide you through it. Our mission today is to unlock the powerful ideas packed into this book and show you why it's not just some dusty academic text, but actually a radical rethinking of maybe the most fundamental question we can ask. What does it even mean to be?
That's right. It sounds abstract, but it offers this really unique way of looking at our own lives, you know, how we connect with the world, what it means to live authentically, especially now with all the information overload and social pressures.
Exactly. So if you've ever found yourself wondering about meaning or mortality, or even just, you know, what your own responsibility is in the grand scheme of things, this deep dive should really resonate.
It should. Mm-hmm. Because while being in time is dense, you're right. Its core message connects deeply with experiences we all have. Mm-hmm. Martin Heidegger, born in Germany, 1889, he was a hugely influential figure in 20th century philosophy, often seen as foundational for existentialism, you know, the focus on freedom, responsibility, meaning, and also phenomenology.
Phenomenology. Yeah. Can you unpack that just a bit?
Sure. Simply put, it's about looking closely at our lived experience as it actually happens before we slap theories onto it, describing the structures of how things appear to us. What makes Heidegger stand out is his deep knowledge of philosophy's history, combined with this almost revolutionary urge to shake it all up. He felt philosophy had kind of lost its way. He thought it had covered up some really profound insights about existence, insights the ancient Greeks had. He insisted we have to start with our concrete everyday lives, our everydayness, not just abstract ideas. Now, we should mention, just as a historical fact, his later involvement with the Nazi Party does cast a shadow. That's undeniable. Mm-hmm. But the philosophical power and sheer originality of being and time itself, well, its influence across so many fields is just immense.
Okay, so a complex figure, definitely. But focusing on the book, this question of the meaning of being, it still sounds so vast. Where does he even begin?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Heidegger's big claim is that philosophy got sidetracked. For centuries, it focused on beings, yeah, you know, individual things, objects, people, and completely forgot to ask about being itself. Mm. Like the very fact that things exist in the first place. Mm-hmm. The background condition that makes any understanding possible at all. His main goal is to reawaken that forgotten question.
Okay, so not just what is this chair, but what does it mean for anything to be at all? So how do you tackle that? It feels like you could go anywhere with it.
His approach is actually quite clever. He says, look, to understand being in general, we need to analyze the one specific being for whom being is actually a question, who actually cares about it.
And that is?
That's us, human beings.
Yeah.
He introduces this special term, Dasein. It literally means being there. It's his word for you, for me. For any human who exists in a way that involves questioning and interpreting their own existence. Mm-hmm. We're not just rocks or chairs. Our being is an issue for us.
Okay. So instead of starting with the cosmos, he starts with us, with the human experience of existing. That makes it feel a bit more grounded.
It does. And that's the key. The book becomes this incredibly detailed analysis of Dasein, not really psychology in the usual sense, but using Dasein's unique way of being as the access point, the only access point, he thinks, to understanding being more broadly. He shows that Dasein is fundamentally being in the world. That's a hyphenated term for him, a single concept. Our basic nature isn't being separate minds looking at a world, but being always already involved in a meaningful world.
Being in the world, not just physically located, then.
Precisely. And from there, the analysis moves from what he calls our inauthentic everyday mode, think just going along with the crowd, towards the possibility of an authentic existence. And that involves confronting our own mortality, our being towards death. The ultimate aim is to show that Dasein's existence is fundamentally structured by time, by temporality, and that temporality is the horizon for understanding being itself.
Okay, let's dive into that a bit deeper. Being in the world. You said it's not just about being physically in a place. What's the core idea there?
The core idea is that we're not isolated minds, like, you know, brains in vats trying to figure out an external reality. Our very existence is our engaged, practical involvement in a meaningful context. We're always already thrown into situations involved in projects. Think about, say, using a tool, a hammer. When you're hammering a nail, You don't usually stop and contemplate the hammer's physical properties, its weight, its material composition.
Aren't you just hammer? It's part of the action.
Exactly. It's just for hammering. This is what Heidegger calls ready-to-hand Zuhandenheit. It's how we typically encounter things in our daily lives. They're part of a network of equipment, seamlessly integrated into our activities and purposes. Your keys are for starting the car. Your phone is for calling someone. It just works, usually without conscious thought.
I had that exact experience this morning. My usual pen, the one I grab without thinking, it ran out of ink. And suddenly, it wasn't just my pen anymore. It was this object, this plastic thing, needing a refill. It became separate.
That's a perfect illustration. When the pen failed its purpose, it shifted from being ready to hand to being present at hand for hand and height. It became an object of scrutiny, something you observe rather than simply use within an activity. Heidegger argues that science, and a lot of traditional philosophy, often makes the mistake of treating everything as if it were present at hand, like objects to be analyzed. They miss our more primary, practical, involved way of being in the world. We often only notice the equipment when it breaks down.
Okay, that distinction makes a lot of sense. So we're immersed in this world of purpose and involvement. What about other people? Where do they fit into this being in the world?
Ah, that's crucial. For Heidegger, being in the world is always inherently being with others. Mitsein. Our existence is fundamentally social. We're always among others, relating to others. However, in our everyday mode, our everydayness, we often fall into living according to the anonymous public norm. You know, what one does, what one says, how one feels about things. Heidegger calls this the they das man.
The they, like social pressure, trends, groupthink.
Exactly. And this is where we often slide into inauthenticity. We flee from our own unique possibilities, our own responsibility, by just conforming to the average public way of being. We let they dictate our choices.
So it's like following the latest fashion trend without asking if you actually like it, or choosing a career because it's what one is expected to do.
Precisely. It's often very subtle. It's not necessarily about conscious decisions against your own desires, but more about just drifting along with the current, letting the anonymous they make the choices for you.
But isn't some level of conformity necessary for society to function? I mean, we follow traffic laws, we adhere to certain social conventions. Is Heidegger saying all that is inauthentic?
That's a really important clarification.
Yeah.
No, he's not saying social norms are inherently bad or that we should all be radical individualists. The they is a necessary part of our social existence. The issue isn't the existence of norms, but when we become completely absorbed in them, when we lose ourselves in the they, to the point where we don't make any genuine choices based on our own possibilities. It's about the degree of conformity and the awareness behind it. It becomes inauthentic when it's an unquestioning, passive absorption.
Okay, so it's about finding that balance, being aware of they without being totally dictated by it. Now, you mentioned earlier this concept of care, sorge, as the fundamental structure of Dasein. Can you unpack that a bit? How does it relate to being in the world in the they?
Right, care is maybe one of the most central concepts. Think of it as the underlying unity of Dasein's being. It's not just caring about things emotionally, though that's related. It's the fundamental way we are structured, and it inherently involves time. Care has three interconnected aspects. First, existence, existentialität. We are always projecting ourselves forward into possibilities. We're always ahead of ourselves, concerned with what we might become. That points towards the future. Second, facticity, facticitate. We are always already thrown into a world and the circumstances we didn't choose our time period, our culture, our body. This is our already been, pointing to the past that shapes us. And third, fallenness, wir fallen. We are typically absorbed in our everyday dealings, caught up in the present concerns dictated by the they, often losing ourselves in chatter and busyness. This points to the present.
Wow, okay, so care isn't just one thing, it's this dynamic structure, stretching us across future possibilities, our given past, and our immersion in the present. That makes sense why you said Dasein is fundamentally temporal.
Exactly. The structure of care is a temporal structure. But if we're always stretched like this, constantly rejecting, already thrown, often lost, how do we achieve a sense of wholeness? How can Dasein be grasped as a complete entity?
Yeah, that's the question. It sounds potentially fragmented.
This is where Heidegger makes a crucial move. He argues that Dasein can only be understood as a whole by considering its ultimate possibility. Being towards death.
That sounds pretty grim.
It sounds grim, but for Heidegger, it's actually the key to authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
He describes death as Dasein's own most non-relational, certain, and indefinite possibility. Let's break that down. It's own most because nobody else can experience your death for you. It's uniquely yours. It's non-relational because it ultimately severs all your ties to the world and others. It's certain it will happen, but its specific timing is indefinite. We don't know when.
So it's this unique, isolating, certain but unscheduled possibility that hangs over us. How does facing that lead to authenticity rather than, say, despair or just ignoring it?
That's the critical part. Heidegger distinguishes between an inauthentic way of relating to death. Maybe seeing it as something that happens to other people or just an event way off in the future in an authentic way. Authentically anticipating death, understanding it as your own most possibility that could arrive at any moment, allows you to pull back from the trivial distractions and dictates of the day. It forces you to ask, given my finite time, what possibilities truly matter to me?
So it acts like a lens, focusing you on what's essential.
Precisely. It allows for resoluteness in Schlossenheit. This isn't just being stubborn. It's about choosing your possibilities authentically in full awareness of your finite situation, your thrownness, and your potential. It's like answering the call of conscience, not a moral voice from outside, but the call of your own potential authentic self, calling you back from being lost in the day.
Okay, so it's about owning your choices, making them deliberately in the face of your own finitude, and all of this care being towards death, resoluteness, you said, it leads back to time, to temporality.
Yes. This is the culmination of the analysis in Division 2 of the book. Temporality is the ontological meaning of care. The deep structure of our being is time. The three aspects of care map directly onto the three ecstasies of time, ways time stands out from itself. The future corresponds to our existence, our being ahead of ourselves, especially when we authentically anticipate death. The past corresponds to our facticity, our thrownness, the having been that we always carry with us. And the present arises from our engagement with the world, our fallenness. But in authentic resoluteness, it becomes the moment of vision, Augenblick, where decisive action happens, grounded in future and past.
So it's not just time like tick-tock on a clock.
Not at all. It's what he calls finite, ecstatic temporality. It's a dynamic unity, this stretching across future, past, present, that is the being of authentic Dasein. We don't just exist in time. In a fundamental sense, Dasein is time.
Wow. Okay. That's a profoundly different way of thinking about ourselves and time. So if we try to boil this down, what are the absolute core messages someone should take away from being in time?
Yeah. Let's try to summarize. Five key themes, maybe. First, the forgotten question of being. We tend to focus on things and forget to ask about the very condition of existence itself, the context that makes meaning possible. Second, authenticity versus inauthenticity. Our default mode is often living by the they, conforming passively. Authenticity requires facing our finitude, death, and making resolute, self-aware choices. It really pushes you to reflect. Are my choices truly mine?
That's a big one. Okay, what else?
Third, being in the world as our fundamental condition. We're not separate minds observing a world. Our existence is being immersed, engaged in a meaningful context. How does that challenge how you see yourself in relation to your environment? Fourth, being towards death is the key to wholeness. Confronting our finitude isn't morbid. It's what allows us to live purposefully and grasp our lives as a whole. Knowing time is limited radically shifts priorities, doesn't it?
It really does. And the fifth.
Fifth, temporality as the horizon of being. We are time, not linear clock time, but this dynamic structure of future, past, present care. Can we learn to experience time more holistically, letting our future aims and past experiences genuinely shape our present actions?
Those are powerful themes. And Heidegger's writing, though challenging, has some incredibly memorable lines that capture these ideas, like, the essence of Dasein lies in its existence.
Yes, meaning we aren't defined by some fixed what, like a table, but by the fact and the way that we exist. We are constantly interpreting ourselves, constantly becoming.
And the in of being in the world means to dwell, to be familiar with, to be involved in. That really nails the idea that it's not just about location, but about intimate engagement.
Absolutely. It's about belonging to the world, not just being in it.
Then there's that striking quote about the they. The they prescribes one state of mind and determines what and how one sees. In this inconspicuousness, the they unfolds its true dictatorship. That really highlights the subtle power of social conformity.
It's a chillingly accurate description sometimes, isn't it? How norms shape us without us even noticing.
And finally, that famous line about death. Death is the possibility of the absolute impossibility of Dasein.
Right. It's the possibility that ends all other possibilities. And acknowledging that impossibility forces us to reckon with the possibilities we do have right now.
So this all sounds philosophically fascinating, but how might someone listening apply these ideas in their actual day-to-day life? What's the practical takeaway?
That's the crucial question, isn't it? So what? Well, I think there are several practical applications. For one, understanding the they can be a powerful tool for combating social pressure and conformity. You can start actively questioning things. When you feel pulled by a trend or social media pressure or consumer choices, ask, wait, is this genuinely my desire or am I just doing what one does? It fosters critical awareness.
That's very relevant today.
What else? Embracing being towards death, not morbidly, but as a principle for finding meaning through finitude. If you truly internalize that your time is limited, it can help prioritize what's genuinely important. Maybe it helps cut through procrastination on things that matter, or helps you let go of trivial pursuits.
Using finitude as a motivator, essentially.
Exactly. And related to that is taking authentic responsibility. The idea of resoluteness encourages owning your situation, your thrownness, and making decisive choices from within that situation, rather than just blaming circumstances or drifting. It promotes a proactive stance toward your own life.
Okay, and maybe one more.
One more, perhaps more subtle, comes from the ready-to-hand, present-at-hand distinction. It can lead to a deeper relationship with the world around us, appreciating the smooth, almost invisible way we engage with things when they work ready-to-hand, like driving a car, using a tool. It's a kind of practical mindfulness. And noticing when that breaks down, when something becomes present at hand, it can make us appreciate the intricate web of involvements that usually just hums along in the background.
That's a great point. Seeing the breakdown not just as an annoyance, but as a moment that reveals the underlying structure. For me, reflecting on all this, what really stands out is that idea about mortality. The notion that facing our finitude isn't meant to be paralyzing or depressing, but is actually the necessary condition for living a truly meaningful, authentic life. It reframes death entirely, not just as an endpoint, but as something that gives urgency and significance to the present moment, to the choices we make right now.
I completely agree. That shift is profound. And for me, what really sticks is the sheer paradigm shift of understanding human existence not as some static thing, some fixed essence, but as this dynamic temporal process. We are beings defined by our possibilities, constantly interpreting ourselves, constantly engaged in the act of becoming. It emphasizes our active role in creating meaning and wrestling with the question of being itself, which leads to that final thought for everyone listening. So how might understanding your own personal being towards death, acknowledging that ultimate ownmost possibility, how might that fundamentally reshape your priorities, your choices, starting today?
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.